Kaiser. So is the well you have the water well you wish you had? 307 Wildcat Well Service is a homegrown local well drilling company that knows everything about where your best water is and how to get it to you. So if you want a second well or just to make the well you've got taste better and run stronger, 307 Wildcat Well Service is a local company with a local price. 307 Wildcat Well Service on Facebook or look for their ad in the business directory under Water Wells in the Country Bounty.
Cool, clear water.
The following message is presented by Century21BHJ.com.
Sheridan County Sportsman's Association is hosting a dealer demo day featuring many of your favorite firearms, ammunition, and silencer manufacturers on Saturday, June 1st from 9 until 2. The event is free to the public. An opportunity to handle and shoot many new guns and silencers. So on June 1st, come on down to the Sheridan County Sportsman's Association at 89 Keystone Road.
Spring is in the air and it's the perfect time to make your property your dream home. Hi, this is Brittany Grzalka at First Northern Bank of Wyoming, and we'd love to see you at our Sheridan office, where we offer everything from lot loans to home loans and home improvement loans with a creative touch to your individual needs. Stop by our branch at 29 North Gould or call 307-673-7777 to start your application today. We look forward to helping you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 449286.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whiting.
Good morning and welcome to Public Pulse. This morning I am joined by University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communications, Mr. Chad Baldwin. Good morning, Chad, and welcome back.
Hey, Floyd, good morning.
How's the weather down there in Laramie?
It's not too shabby right now. It's been a little hard to predict here the last few days. If you're good for 15 minutes and then you're getting, you know, sleeted on the next. So.
Absolutely. What does the drive look like heading over to Cheyenne? Is it pretty green down there yet?
Yeah, things are greening up really nice.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I commute from Buffalo every morning, and my favorite time of year is right now. Driving up over those hills, just green as far as your eye can see, skirted by snow-capped mountains. Can't really beat that. And reminds you why you're here every day. Now, there's actually been a lot of graduation ceremonies happening up here, and UW's spring commencement was May 11th, correct?
Yes, indeed, Floyd. Yeah, it's a great time of year always, and handed out to diplomas to about 1,800 students here, so graduates. So that's exciting.
That's incredible.
Yep, it's great.
Who gave the keynote address this year?
Yeah, it was an alum of the university who has gone on to have a great career in the nursing industry. Her name's Gardia Bannister. She spent a lot of her growing up years in Casper, actually, and graduated back in the 80s, and it just was very actually inspirational. Her personal story is very inspirational, and then she did a great job of, you know, encouraging the graduates to think big and make a difference.
You know, Chad, is there any way people can log on to your website or maybe watch it on YouTube?
Yeah, the ceremony is available if you look it up YouTube, UW, University of Wyoming Commencement, Spring Commencement 2024. You can watch it. Now, we had three ceremonies, Floyd, because we have so many, and there's four. Well, let me add a fifth. So the three that were in the Dub Arena Auditorium here on campus, there was two undergraduate ceremonies and then one ceremony for graduate students. Then we also had the law school has its own ceremony here on campus, and then of course we have our branch campus in Casper that had a ceremony as well. So, but the three that you can find online on YouTube are those that took place in the arena auditorium, the big ones.
Now, that must take a lot of planning, Chad. I'll bet commencement is months in the works.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a group of people on campus here that, and of course, and the individual ones I just mentioned. That put a lot of work into it. You know, you got to and you have to work with all the graduates to make sure they get their caps and gowns ordered and get the staffing done, and all the ceremonial aspects of it are very important, and we're very proud of, don't want to call it a show, but in some ways it is, right? It's a celebration, and you want to do it right.
And every single one of those students, all 1,800 of them, have been waiting years and working for years for that moment. And so what a great time, what a very important moment for everyone in that crowd. And I know, you know, as someone who has planned something in the past, very large, that, you know, just giving out awards, you want it to go well for them. You want it to be perfect for them because they've worked so hard to get there.
Absolutely. You put it exactly the way we feel about it.
Now, UW recently received a pretty large gift from a Wyoming ranching couple. Can you tell us how much that was and who these extremely generous people are?
Yeah, it's $2.5 million, Floyd, and that's a big amount of money from Art and Catherine Nicholas. They own the Wagon Hound Ranch over here near the Laramie Range between Douglas and Wheatland there on the in Converse Platte counties, and they're very successful folks in both ranching and then their other fields, which are I think in investment banking is where they've been very successful. But they support this new program we have at the university here in ranch management and agricultural leadership. So that's what this is for. It's going to benefit students and faculty, and we have private sector partners involved. And it's all about the future of Wyoming ranching, making sure that the folks who manage our, you know, big swaths of land across Wyoming that are so important for many reasons to all of us here, that they have the skills and experience and understanding that they need. And so it's great. It's a really important gift for a very important program, and we're very appreciative to the Nicholases for their support.
Now, this will support the Wyoming Ranching Excellence Fund, which in turn supports the Ranch Management and Agricultural Leadership Program. Can you tell us just a little bit more about that particular program? Because my wife recently graduated up here and got a certification in arts administration, and we were watching the ceremony, and everyone was getting their degrees up here at Sheridan College, and her father had made the trek all the way over, her stepfather had. And when somebody got I think it was a degree or a certificate in land management, he looked at me and he said, "Wow, you don't hear that one very much." And he'd been through a few of these because he's got a couple of daughters. And so I said, "Well, around here, you really do. It's a very popular degree certificate to get in this area because land is so important to so many people here." Could you explain what the Ranch Management and Agricultural Leadership Program really does for individuals and the different levels of degree that this program can offer folks?
You bet, Floyd. So, yeah, we have our College of Agriculture that has been here since the university was formed, right? It's where a land-grant school that was essential. Then we have many degrees within that that are important, like range management and animal science and ag business, ag economics, ag communications. I mean, those degrees are all there. This is a new, it's a bachelor's degree, but there's more to it. There's also seminars that people can take around the state. So it's like almost like a continuing education sort of program as well for people in the ag industry. So those are, I think, the key components of it. But the classes in it are things like public policy and regulatory considerations in ranch and rangeland management. problem solving and planning, leadership, all of these things, in addition to the courses in animal science and range management, ag communication, ag business, all of that is wrapped up in this new program.
And, you know, I think anyone out there who owns a pretty good-sized parcel of land can testify that with that comes, like, land management type of bureaucracy. And that can be difficult, especially some of the red tape that is required with certain land management, especially once we start kind of traipsing off into the public land use, you know, requirements and red tape. And knowing how to navigate through that is so vital if you're looking to achieve a goal. And so I would suggest to anybody that, you know, when it comes to these Ranging in the West seminar series, if you see one pop up, it's probably within your best interest to go ahead and maybe attend one of those, see what they're all about. Who knows? You might come out of there with that one piece of knowledge that you've really been looking for. Because I understand land management, you know, has become pretty difficult and very black and white because it comes down to the paperwork, regulations, and things like that. Kind of moving on, a UW associate professor's hydration research was actually featured in a prominent fitness magazine. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Evan Johnson is a professor in our division of kinesiology, which is part of our College of Health Sciences. And he's an expert in hydration, figuring out how much water should you be drinking every day. Now, his published research has looked like specifically at children with chronic kidney disease, and so they're vulnerable to be dehydrated. And so it's taking a look at what's, you know, that particular segment of the population for which this is a real key issue. But beyond that, so Men's Health Magazine had featured his look at, and basically trying to answer the question, how much water should you drink every day? And it's really interesting because the issue, if you drink too much, it can be a problem. And, of course, if you don't drink enough, it can be a problem. I didn't realize, honestly, that you could overhydrate, but you can. And so this article talks about and I can tell you, the specific recommendations are 3.7 liters of water per fluid, I guess you'd say, for men, 2.7 liters for women, and that's just under a gallon for men and 90 ounces for women. You don't want to do it all at once, but you know, we all know, especially up in this high country, it can be pretty dry in our state. Hydration is a big deal, and we've got an expert right here on our campus who's getting some national attention for it.
Well, that's fantastic, because I can remember, you know, I guess it would probably be about 2004, 2005, but everybody out there at the UW campus was carrying those, I think they were called Nalgene bottles. You still see that quite a bit out there?
Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, Floyd, for the students who are coming for our new student days this year, who are going to be here this fall, the giveaway swag item was a hydro flask with the bucking horse and rider on it there, the university's logo. Yeah, that's definitely an issue. You see people carrying around this stuff all the time. And so there is an increased awareness of it, I think, for sure, especially among young people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was in the service when we went over to the sandbox where we learned that, yes, you can overhydrate. You need to kind of balance these things out. And so I had my guys, when things were getting hot, you know, two bottles of water and one bottle of Gatorade. And I was trying to put that down my guys every other hour or every hour, depending on the heat. And so it gets to the point where you've really got to babysit that. But, yeah, that's where I learned that you can actually overhydrate yourself. And that seems a little odd, like you said. Seems a little strange, but it can happen. All right. Yeah. We're going to have more with the University of Wyoming right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan. We'll be right back.
Give your graduate a gift they can use anywhere with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. As a customer, you can load up to $1,000 on a gift card with no purchase fee. With a Visa gift card, they can buy gas, dine out, or treat themselves to something special. The options are endless. Make their big day even more memorable with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. Visit First Federal at 671 Illinois Street to purchase yours today. Member FDIC.
Pella windows are made for extremes. From blazing hot summers to freezing cold winters, with energy efficiency options to keep you comfortable and save you money year-round, and now enjoy extreme savings at Pella of Wyoming.
Get 20% off qualifying Pella projects or 0% APR for 36 months. Offer ends 5/31/2024. Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
Pella is ready for extremes. Make sure your home is too. Learn more at PellaSheridan.com.
So I got pulled over by the sheriff and he asked me to say the alphabet starting with M. I said Malphabet and drove off. Well, the same goes for you and that old 4x4 side-by-side. Well, you're in luck because Hando Service Center has some new machines in stock and a shipment on the way that's stuck on the other side of that Baltimore bridge. Brands like CF Moto and Arctic-Cat. Plus, Hando's has many pre-owned models on the lot, all tuned and ready to go. Oh, yeah, and if you can't spell it, you probably shouldn't tattoo it. Hando Service Center on Sheridan's Heartland Drive.
Hey, boaters. Before you launch into Wyoming waters, let's talk about keeping our waters clean and healthy. Did you know that AIS decals are required for all motorized and hard-sided watercraft? Inflatables over 10 feet in length need one, too. The funds generated from the sale of decals help prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species. It's a small sticker with a big impact. Learn more at protectwyomingwaters.org. Sponsored by the Wyoming Game and Fish, the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Are you excited about summer in the Bighorns, or are you a little worried about wildlife encounters? Take the Wildlife Encounters for Dummies quiz, and let's see if you'll survive your next encounter. Presented by Mandy Koltiska with Century 21 BHJ Realty. Here's a quick example for you. Let's say you're peacefully camping when a group of mischievous raccoons tries to steal your food. Do you A, invite them over and offer them a beer? B, throw food over at the campers in the adjacent camp spot, hoping they'll follow it? Or C, start fishing and show them how to bait a hook? Time's up. The correct answer is, I guess you'll have to take the quiz to find out. Wildlife Encounters for Dummies. Will you survive your next encounter? Sponsored by Mandy Koltiska with Century 21 BHJ Realty. Remember, it's all fun and games until a drunked out bear hits up your campsite. Stay safe out there. Take the quiz for a chance to win amazing prizes at SheridanMedia.com.
Morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting, and this morning I'm speaking with University of Wyoming Director of Institutional Communications, Chad Baldwin. Now, Chad, we talked about UW's spring commencement in the first part of the show. I imagine a lot of folks might not realize that there is always kind of a growing number of non-traditional students. For instance, you sent me a story about the Du Bois Weed and Pest assistant supervisor earning a master's degree at 63, correct?
Yeah, that's right, Floyd. I mean, there are actually always a number of very compelling stories for our graduates, but this one kind of jumped out to us. I mean, Bob Finley's been a Greenbaum County Weed and Pest employee for a long time. He grew up in that area. Actually, I did as well, a Fremont County kid originally, but I didn't know Bob. But, you know, he works from Du Bois. He's a real fixture in that community. And the weed and pest folks play an important role in our state right now with all the invasive plant species that are here that are harmful for animals or for, you know, a variety of things, cause fires, all that stuff. And so, anyway, Bob decided he got his bachelor's degree 35 years ago.
Wow.
Here at UW. And he just felt like, and working with Brian Melor, who's actually based in Sheridan, where you live, and he's kind of the weed guru of Wyoming, you could say. He knows more about invasive plants than I think just about anybody, and is doing stuff about it. Anyway, working with Brian, Bob pursued and got his master's degree, and you know, is. Says it's helped him in his job, helped him doing it, do his job better up there in Fremont County.
You know, working a full-time job, I imagine, you know, 63, he's probably got some kids or maybe even some grandkids of his own. That's pretty dang busy trying to get that done and then essentially go on living your life at the same time. I mean, that takes a brand new level of commitment.
Sure does. Yep, absolutely. And as you said, we'd have more and more non-traditional students doing this sort of thing. Some are doing it online. We have more and more opportunities there for that. In some ways, I think that might even be harder, Floyd, because, you know, I don't know, I'm more of a face-to-face person. Some people do flourish with online classes, but I think maybe it's a little bit of a generational thing. That's my personal opinion. But Bob persevered and accomplished it, and that's a great thing.
I really do love the advancement of these online classes. It makes these types of things and higher learning available for so many other people. But I'm with you on that one, Chad. I took my first online class back in 2002, and I think it was all done over message boards. We didn't even have like a chat ability at that time. We were all just leaving very long messages for each other on a website. And I mean, essentially, that was the class itself. And yeah, it took a lot of discipline to have to sit down and read through all of that before you even really started your work, you know. So I could understand that, but it has come a long way. Video and with Zoom chats, and it's like being there in the classroom. But once again, I'm with you. I think face-to-face is just more valuable to me, and maybe that is kind of our generation. Now,
yep.
Another set of degrees the University of Wyoming has conferred, this is its highest award, the honorary doctoral degree. You guys gave this to two individuals that were recognized during those UW commencement ceremonies we were talking about in the first half. Who are these individuals?
Yeah, so Greg Hill and Noah Hole are their names. In this case, they're both UW alumni. Now that isn't always the case. Some of the honorary degree recipients they're not always UW people, UW graduates. But this year they are, and Greg Hill is a president and chief operating officer of Hess Corporation, which is a global energy company, oil and gas. And has had a tremendous career. Actually, I think a Riverton High School graduate who has just went on to have a very, very successful career, and is contributing back to his alma mater. He's a UW engineering graduate, and anyway, very, very high levels of distinction for him. And then Dr. Noah Hole is. He is a graduate of UW in the healthcare field, epidemiology in particular.
Oh, wow.
And he's a public health expert. So infectious disease, molecular diagnostics, and bioinformatics, whatever those mean.
Yeah, I'm with you.
but he does like sequencing and that sort of stuff. And he is part of an important public health agency that's international now. Before that, he was the Wyoming State Health Laboratory in Cheyenne and played a big role of doing all that testing during that COVID pandemic. Anyway, so it's exciting to highlight him. He's making the world a better place. Both of these guys are, and it's always fun to give that high tribute to people who really are making a difference in the world.
Now, people may be wondering what an honorary doctorate means. Can you help us understand the meaning behind that honor?
Well, you know, it's something, of course, that lots of universities do and have done for a long, long time. I mean, for centuries, actually. And it's sort of like sometimes an academic degree just doesn't quite cut it, you know, in terms of achievement. These folks, when you reach a certain level of achievement, what can a university do? Well, what we do is we give degrees. And so to honor them, there's a Doctor of Humane Letters. That's one of the versions of these honorary degrees. And there's a Doctor of Science, and that's what Noah Hole got. And so There may be others, Floyd, that I'm not aware of, but I think those are the two big ones. And all they do, you know, they're honorary, right? That it's a they're sort of recognizing achievement beyond the classroom.
Absolutely. And I always kind of looked at it like what you're talking about. You know, it's the highest degree that can be earned, and so we're going to go ahead and give this because of you've achieved something, maybe even in your professional life, sometimes even like a personal life, but you've made the world such a better place that we're just going to go ahead and tell you you're a doctor. You know, you've
That's right.
gone above and beyond what most of us have seen and done. Now, one more big story, and this one's for all the sports fans out there. So I see James in there. The Cowboy basketball fans should know that the university has named a new head coach of the basketball program. Chad, who was awarded this job?
Yeah, Sundance Wicks, Wyoming's own. A kid, he grew up in Gillette, very successful athlete for Campbell County High School, and then went on to have a very successful college career, and was an assistant coach here. Last time we made the NCAA tournament a couple years ago, and was a very successful head coach this past year at Wisconsin Green Bay, really turned that program around. When Coach Linder left, I think all Wyoming fans are grateful that we have this this guy who really knows our state and is very committed to Wyoming to step up and take that role. And then if anybody is met to Coach Wicks, you know the guy is a bundle of energy. I mean, the guy is just I spent a day with him a couple years ago, and I was ready to run through walls for him by the end of the day. That's the kind of character we have here, and I think we're all very excited about it.
He really inspires.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed.
You know, some of the best coaches in the world are the individuals who want to make you improve, not just on the court or on the field, but in your own life. You know, they're really mentors. And so it's good to hear that, you know, he was even able to light that fire within you. And running these programs is very stressful work. So I wish him all the best. And Chad, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to speak with us. It's always great to hear about the work and the people doing fantastic things down there at our university. Thank you.
Thank you, Floyd.
All right, when we return, we're going to speak with the Sheridan County Library System. Stay with us. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Give your graduate a gift they can use anywhere with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. As a customer, you can load up to $1,000 on a gift card with no purchase fee. With a Visa gift card, they can buy gas, dine out, or treat themselves to something special. The options are endless. Make their big day even more memorable with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. Visit First Federal at 671 Illinois Street to purchase yours today. Member FDIC.
Heads up! Whether it's at work, at home, or play, take a few seconds to look up and locate any overhead power lines. When working outside, be sure to keep yourself and any tools or equipment you're using at least 10 feet away. Teach your children to fly kites or toys in areas away from overhead power lines, and do not attempt to remove anything that has become tangled with a line. Always assume an overhead power line is energized and dangerous. A safety message brought to you by Montana Dakota Utilities, in the community to serve.
Moss Holders showroom and warehouse are overstocked with furniture. So right now, Moss Holders is having a Memorial Day clearance sale. Every single item has been discounted, and you could save up to 50% off select items. Tons of items have received 10, 20, 30, even 40% off sale tags. Stop by Moss Holders now through Monday to save big on in-stock items. All special orders will also be discounted, so you can find the perfect piece for your home no matter what you're looking for. That's Moss Holders Memorial Day clearance sale going on now. Moss Holders, furniture is our passion.
Blue Peak Internet is not just any internet. It's free of all the stuff you don't want and full of all the stuff you do. Worry-free speed, hassle-free reliability, haggle-free pricing with no term contracts or hidden fees. Plus, included equipment and local support. It's peak internet delivered across our next level fiber network with performance and prices that exceed your expectations. That's the power of Blue Peak Internet. Find your plan at mybluepeak.com. Terms and conditions apply.
This Memorial Day, join Canes and Champion Funeral Homes for a special ceremony honoring our fallen heroes May 27th from 9 to 2 next to Sheridan Municipal Cemetery in the empty lot. There's free lunch and brunch for all who attend. At 10 a.m., witness the Drum and Bugle Corps and the National Anthem sung by Miss Wyoming USA while there's a solemn reading of veterans' names. Canes and Champion Funeral Homes Memorial Day Ceremony, May 27th from 9 to 2. They are family helping families.
We all know there are morning people and not so morning people. But now that McDonald's has bagels, the morning people demographic might just have to make room for some new members of the club. Talk about a game changer.
There's no better way to wake up. Try McDonald's hearty steak, egg, and cheese bagel with a juicy steak patty and grilled onions, fluffy eggs, and melty cheese. Or try one with smoky bacon or savory sausage at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. And for the second part of the show this morning, I am joined by the director of the Sheridan County Library System, Amy Long. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you? I'm
doing very well. I want to welcome you back to the show and say, you know, how long have you been up there?
I started the first week of August, I think.
It's fairly still kind of new.
Yeah.
I think we've got enough road under you. I can ask you, how's everything settling in?
Oh, I think it's going great. I mean, everything's a transition, right?
Yeah.
Had a lot of stable leadership for many, many years. So coming into that, but the staff is doing great. They're very flexible and patient and teaching me the things I need to know about the system, coming from a very different but similar system in Douglas County, Colorado.
And when it comes to like stepping into the Sheridan County, especially the Falmer, because, I mean, you had so many construction projects that were kind of just getting buttoned up as you walked in there. What was that like kind of coming in? Because I know Cameron pretty well. A great guy. Everybody who knows him loves him. And his handoff had to be pretty thorough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he had already started over at the county. So I think for me, there was a certain pressure to try to be as self-sufficient as possible. But there's no real orientation for a job like this. So,
right.
I did have to reach out and ask him for some help, and he was very patient, very helpful. He has some big shoes to fill. I have a huge amount of respect for him and the leadership he provided for the library for so many years. It's very humbling to see how far they've come and the things that they've been working on, and then looking to, you know, how do I contribute to their future?
Right. Exactly. How do you take the reins and head on down the road and kind of what influences and changes can you make to just make it even better from here? So are all the construction projects all buttoned up and all of that's finished now?
Currently, we've finished up the inner circle and the tween sort of computer area in the children's area. And so we're sort of pausing right now to sort of reassess and see where we're going to head in the future. So yeah, those are complete. We're looking to see how we can maybe introduce the inner circle to the community again so they can see what it's like now. It's quite different. And see if we can really help communicate how far we've come with those projects and where they're at now.
So if you haven't been down to the Falmer in a while, folks, I think today, maybe even this weekend, is a fantastic time to head on down and give a visit, walk through there, especially if you've got your tweens, because that has expanded quite a bit. And reading is fashionable nowadays, which I really, really enjoy. You sent me a copy of the 2024 through 27 strategic plan for the library system. How long has this been in the works? Because this is a fundamental base for just about every practice and procedure you have up there, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think any strategic plan is very key to evaluating how you move forward. And so when I came on in August, I talked with the board about doing a strategic plan, and we basically got it started in February. We hired Peak Consulting to help us with the facilitation of these meetings, with organizing and gathering the feedback, and then helping us turn it into overall mission statement, vision statement, and strategic plan, which has four initiatives over the next 3 years.
And, you know, so you started this in February, mm-hmm. which is kind of amazing to me, because usually this takes a lot longer for organizations to try and get this developed and sat down and agreed upon. And so I think just in the amount of time that you've managed to get this finished to the point where you can begin the implementation is actually quite an accomplishment, because these things really are extremely important for those who don't know what a strategic plan is. It really does kind of set the direction for the next couple of years that your library system is going to be taking. What is the process in developing a strategic plan? You told us you sat them down. You said, hey, I would really like to do this. What's the first step past that? I mean, once they give you the thumbs up.
The first step was to get a facilitator. So once we hired Peak Consulting, I sat down with them and talked with them about what kind of timeline we really had. Our goal was to get a completed strategic plan by the budget process start, so that we had an idea of where we wanted the funds to go. And so in order to do that, we had it backed up from that. And I would say the one piece I wish we could have done that we are planning to do next time is really involve the community and their feedback. There wasn't time to organize community input sessions, especially with our branches.
Yeah.
So that actually became a strategic initiative. So one of our initiatives over the next 3 years is how do we organize and gather community feedback so that come next strategic plan time, we can organize and effectively gather feedback from the community as part of the planning process. I felt really good about that because it is important to include the community. There just wasn't time given our timeline, me starting in August, the process starting in February, and trying to get it complete by the end of the fiscal year. So we are excited to look at all the options for how to communicate with the community, how to help them understand us, and also how to understand their needs and their feedback around the library.
Absolutely. You know, and like you said, doing that not just with the Falmer, but with all of the, you know, branches that are out there in our smaller ancillary communities. That would kind of take, you know, because you got to make everybody aware, and then you got to set deadlines, and then you got to wait for that feedback to come in. Yeah, that it takes a lot longer than what people think it does, because you want to make sure that you get, if you're going to include everybody, you want it to be everybody, and you want to make sure that you're covering everybody's calendar so they've got enough time to actually get that feedback turned into you. So it's good to hear that that's going to be an initiative. You guys held a series of workshops. So what did those workshops look like? Was there a lot of back and forth, or was it really kind of a, hey, we're thinking this, go ahead and tell us what you think, and then we're going to go forward?
It was actually a really collaborative discussion. It was a lot of fun. We set a couple of different special meetings with the board of directors or the board of trustees, where we sat down and talked about what do people see? What are our strengths? What are our threats? What are our opportunities? What are our weaknesses? Where do we want to focus our time? What is a priority for the organization right now? Then we had a few workshops with the staff. And additionally, I was able to get the leadership of our ancillary groups together. So we had the president of our Friends board, the chair of our foundation board, our treasurer from the foundation board, as well as our county commissioner liaison, all came together to talk with Peak Consulting about what they see and what they feel is a priority. So while we couldn't reach out to the whole community or meet with the entirety of those boards, we were able to get their representation of their thoughts. The library leadership team, which is all the supervisors and sort of department heads, came together to offer their thoughts and what they see and what they've heard from the community. So while we couldn't completely reach out to the whole community, we felt like the people we asked had an inkling of where the community wanted us to focus and what they utilize and what they're hoping to see in the future. So those meetings were just very organic, lots of discussion, lots of ideas captured. And over time, you could see these very strong themes pop up around our needs, around what we need to take care of first before we can further develop any ideas. And it was great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you start to see kind of, you know, those themes, like what you were talking about, okay, well, now more than one person has said X and Y. So we're going to go ahead and put that at the top, because apparently that is something that everybody wants to see. And those eventually, I imagine, become initiatives. Mm-hmm. So you've got four strategic initiatives. Tell me what those are, and then we'll actually cover each one.
Absolutely. The very first one is community outreach. They're not really in any numerical order, but community outreach is the one I usually start with, which is really about how do we reach out and become a partner in the community. Our new mission statement is nurturing lifelong curiosity, enrichment, and community. Community is a huge part of what the library supports. It's a part of our success. And our vision is to become a vital partner in the community where all can discover, create, connect, and thrive. And in order to do that, we have to find what are those organizations where it's natural for us to partner and support each other. What are the opportunities we have to engage the community either in ways we have before or in new ways that we haven't thought of yet? And how do we develop those ideas, and how do we really integrate ourselves into the community?
And, you know, I talk to a lot of 501c3s, and that's a word that I have heard from almost all of them, because everybody's working with limited resources. And boy, mm-hmm. it feels like as the world is getting more expensive, the resource pool is getting pretty shallow. So by partnering together, everyone kind of extends their resource pool just a little bit farther. They kind of gain, you know, a little bit more soldiers to go out there and do the footwork. So partnerships, yeah, are something that I have seen and heard from just about every 501c3. Partnering together to kind of make sure that we're getting all of our bases covered without, you know, double coverage on a service, which is something else that's absolutely fantastic. So how will the library, addressing community outreach, how will the library reach more people within the community and remain a viable resource in this ever-growing digital age?
I think that's key for libraries as the environment changes, as digital resources become more available and more readily available. What we call sort of the technology gap becomes different. It's no longer necessarily providing the basics of computer technology for a community. It might look like offering the luxury technology to the community, ways we can check things out that are non-traditional that allow people to experience something they couldn't experience without the library. And in order to figure out what that is, you kind of have to know where your community's at. What are the other resources they have? What are they also using? And where do they need something that we can provide that's within our mission, which is within the general realm of what a library does? We don't want to become something we're not. But how can we identify and meet the needs of the community as things change? The only thing we need to remember is things will always change. And in order to remain relevant, we have to know what the changes are, know where our community stands, know what their needs are, and be top of mind for them as they move forward as a resource for them.
Wow, and that is a difficult charge to kind of undertake. I don't think a lot of people realize that, but you are trying to see four or five blocks down the road while the rest of us are two blocks behind you. So that is a difficult charge. All right, next one, organizational structure.
Yeah, organizational structure is one of my main passions. I feel like any organization has to have alignment, consistency, and clarity in order to run optimally, meaning they know what they're about, they know what they do, and they have clear direction and guidance in how to do it. That sounds easy, but it is actually really hard, and there's a lot of small things that need to be straightened out in order to get there. The first one was our mission and vision, because you need something to align around. The staff needs something to point towards so that we're all pointing in the same direction. And once you get that, then you're able to grow and expand because your foundation is strong and the staff feel confident and comfortable and the processes are in place that allow us to run well so that we can add things or look at other things. The more efficient you get, the more you can do, but you can't do more with less. You could only do things really well so that you can do more with the same.
And I think everybody out there can kind of identify a little bit with going to a job. And it just seemed like nobody knew what the heck was going on. And I don't mean that in like an offensive way. Everybody's doing their job, but who do I answer to? And is it just this individual? Because I also seem to have to answer to that individual. Chain of command. So important. And I think if anybody out there has worked a job where there wasn't one, and maybe they had to answer to two or three different people, and yet there was confusion over who was in charge of what, they totally understand why this is such an important aspect to a strategic plan. I know where we're going. I know how I'm going to play my part to help us get there. And then you've got a strong army. All right. So moving on to financial stability. Funding, always an issue, and it's always going to be an issue. How will the library provide services and resources while maintaining a feasible budget?
That's exactly the question. Not only that, how is our library funded? I think many people would not necessarily be able to point out exactly how the funding structure works. We are tax funded by the county. There is funds that come through there. We also have a foundation and a friends group. So how do all of those organizations work together to create the financial picture of the library? It's not exactly clear, and I would love to add more clarity. I think people have been living with it for so long, they just think they assume that they know how it works, but there might be some surprises there. So how do we create that full picture and then communicate it clearly so that everyone understands how the library support system works so that we can be around for years and years to come? I also think figuring out not just this year's budget forecast, but how do we forecast 2 or 3 years in the future? How do we say, this is where we're at, this is where we want to go, this is how we're going to get there? Obviously, the idea of being able to stay flat is appealing, but how do you continue to evolve and grow and get better if your budget always stays flat, especially in times of inflation, times when even books are increasing in cost? If our budget stays the same, then how do we purchase the materials that the community is used to using? How do we pay the staff in the way that the staff needs to get good retention and expertise and really commitment to their role in the library? So I think it's important to paint a picture that is realistic, that also allows for growth and economic and financial security, but keeping in mind that you have something you have to work within as well.
Well, and like you were saying, while you're trying to look four blocks down the road, that's got to be so difficult to try and project that, because if you want to be able to provide a level of technology or digital information that kind of surpasses what we have at the house, you've got a plan for that today to get us there in 4 years.
Yeah, especially when, if you think about digital downloads, the model that the publishers have chosen, you know, a digital file, many people can use it at once, right? That's not how books work. Digital books, you have to purchase each individual copy like you would a physical copy. So in addition, because they last forever, ironically, they charge more. So the new James Patterson, we might buy 6 or 7 physical copies to circulate. We also have to buy the digital copy. Each copy we want to circulate can only circulate to one at a time. And it's going to be $80 per copy. So these are things you have to look at when you're considering the financial future of the library. Is the digital age impacts more than just the format people are using. It impacts the budget. It impacts the ability to provide that format within the scope that we have now.
Last one, situational awareness and preparedness. We got 2 minutes.
All right. So situational awareness and preparedness is really, what are the things that we need in place to help us respond to the unexpected? Very challenging to figure out what's unexpected, because that's the whole point of the unexpected. But we know that there might be weather emergencies. There might be police kind of emergencies that we need to be prepared for in the library to know how to respond to. So we're really looking at, how do we get that training together? How do we help train the leadership team? How do we have consistent practices? And what haven't we thought of that we need to be prepared for?
You're going to be working with Jesse Ludekaus quite a bit on that strategic part. Because it doesn't the library serve as like an emergency HQ emergency management can actually use and utilize. So you could become the headquarters should a mass emergency actually take place here. So that is a fantastic initiative to have in your back pocket so that everyone there at the library themselves suddenly becomes an employee of emergency management, and everyone's got a fantastic duty that they can contribute and do during such times of crisis, which I hope never come across.
But
I do want to thank you for coming in this morning, Amy. It's always a pleasure seeing you. And I love talking about this kind of stuff. Strategic plans, as long as they work out and people put them in place, they work out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Share it.
Give your graduate a gift they can use anywhere with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. As a customer, you can load up to $1,000 on a gift card with no purchase fee. With a Visa gift card, they can buy gas, dine out, or treat themselves to something special. The options are endless. Make their big day even more memorable with a First Federal Bank and Trust Visa gift card. Visit First Federal at 671 Illinois Street to purchase yours today. Member FDIC.
Time to get out and enjoy some spring driving, but make sure those tires are ready for the trip, Chris Hayden.
Bob, bring your vehicle down to Waring Chevrolet and let us take a look at the condition of your tires. If they need to be replaced, you don't need to wait for a tire sale because we offer all the major brand tire names with a price match guarantee. If you find a better price within 30 days of the purchase, we'll refund the difference.
Get on the road with new tires from Waring Sheridan Chevrolet, 107 East Downs, or online, waringsheridan.com.
Price match guarantees within 100 miles of the dealer.
Hi, this is Joe Steger with Century 21 BHJ Realty. As you're all aware, there's construction happening on Main Street again. We know it can be inconvenient, but let's not forget to support our downtown businesses. Century 21 BHJ Realty encourages you to shop, dine, and explore the downtown area. The sidewalks remain open, and there are plenty of parking options available. Let's keep our downtown community thriving by showing our support. Century 21 BHJ Realty, supporting our community since 1908 and encouraging you to help support our downtown during construction and always.
SSR Construction, Sheridan's premier excavating contractor, is currently filling positions for year-round laborers. SSR performs all types of construction, and this is a great opportunity to learn all facets of the construction business. Receive good pay with a nice benefit package that can include paid holidays, partially paid health insurance, paid vacation, and a retirement plan. Experience is preferred, but SSR Construction will train those willing to learn. Call Brett today at 751-6356. That's 751-6356.
What are you doing this Memorial Day weekend? Hi, Kurt Smith here for the Sheridan Commercial Company. If you have projects lined out for the weekend, we'll be open and ready to help. Our staff will help you get the right products for your projects at the Sheridan Commercial Company. Paint is on sale, got dandelions, working on the sprinkler system, potting some plants, lawn needs some fertilizer. We know you have a choice, and thank you for shopping at the Sheridan Commercial Company. We're open all Memorial Day weekend for whatever you need help with at 303 Broadway.
This is Floyd Whiting, and I wanted to welcome you to Jackalopes Explore, the new video podcast from Sheridan Media. This is unlike any other podcast. We do a deep dive into the jackalope hole on a myriad of topics. UFOs? Yep. Bigfoot? Oh yeah. Local, national, and global politics? You betcha. Social media and conspiracies? Yeah. Join the Jackpack Weekly at SheridanMedia.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.